they had before they even opened the book. It's tempting to be a crusading marketer, to set out to turn coffee drinkers into tea drinkers, vodka drinkers into teetotalers, Republicans into Democrats. And every once in a while, you get lucky and succeed. But this is a difficult and challenging path. People don't want to change their worldview. They like it, they embrace it, and they want it to be reinforced. Vernacular. Once you've presented a story to people who share your worldview and are paying attention, the vernacular you use becomes astonishingly important. The words, colors, typefaces, images, media, packaging, pricing, all the ways you can possibly color your story become far more important than the story itself. I wrote this sitting in the Dragonfly Coffee House in Pleasantville, New York. The vernacular is perfect for the story they intend to tell. Elvis, the early Elvis, is on the stereo. The stone statues of Buddha are in the window, and the ceramic mugs make just the right sound as they touch the surface of the stone tables. The blackboards are handwritten, and a guide dog for the blind in training is sitting under the table, softly whining. The coffee and tea, the, quote, products, unquote, ostensibly sold here, are identical to that for sale at half the price across the street at the diner. But that's okay, because no one is here for the product. We're here for the story and the way believing it makes us feel. This is why copywriting and web design and photography are so important, why it matters how your sales force dresses and speaks. When Pat Holt strings together a list of words not to overuse, actually, totally, absolutely, completely, continually, constantly, continuously, literally, really, unfortunately, ironically, incredibly, hopefully, finally, she's not being a stickler for formality and grammar. Instead, she's reminding us that words matter, that poor word use is just a red flag for someone who wants to ignore you. George Carlin. While any author would jump at the chance to include something from George Carlin in a book, I actually have a good reason. Euphemisms. Euphemisms may seem like political correctness run amok, but they are actually focused on telling stories that are framed to get past a person's biases and give the speaker a chance to tell a story. Here are 10 from Carlin, some pretty facetious. Prostitute equals commercial sex worker. Non-believers equals the unchurched. Lying on a job application equals resume enhancement. Police clubs are batons. Porn stars are adult entertainers. Room service is really private dining. Nightclubs are now party spaces. Fat ladies are big women. A committee is now a task force, and a maid is called a room attendant. In each case, the euphemism allows the person telling the story to paint a picture before the door of attention gets slammed in her face. No one wants to be on a committee, even if it's a good one. Committee creates a knee-jerk, a quick decision about stasis and boredom. Task force, at least for now, has enough energy to allow us to listen for the rest of the sentence. The same is true for nightclub. No one is going to book a bar mitzvah, no matter how edgy, at a nightclub. But a party space? Well, at least we'll take a look before we turn it down. Early adopters, and so on. Technology marketers love to talk about early adopters and the mass market. Early adopters are the techno geeks and nerds who go out and buy the latest gizmo. The mass market waits, sometimes for years, until a technology is much cheaper and totally proven. The DVD followed this path. It took about 10 years to make its way from the geek's living room to your mom's. Well, the difference between early adopters and the mass market is actually one of worldview with a different name. It's the same as the difference between people who are inclined to go to a doctor instead of staying home when they've got the flu. The same as the difference between people who are vegetarians and those who would rather have steak for dinner. Try to visualize a bell curve broken into pieces. All the way on the left, innovators. Next, early adopters. The center, the biggest chunk of the bell curve, are the early and late majority. And all the way on the right are the laggards. They're the people who still have a 12 flashing on their VCR. Geoffrey Moore studied how products move through this curve in his book, Crossing the Chasm. A big part of succeeding with stories is realizing that so many categories work in exactly the same way. The mistake is to assume that there's only one product adoption life cycle, that the only worldview that matters is a person's likelihood to accept a new technology. This is just one tiny flavor of worldview, even though the math and the concepts are the same. Imagine that same bell curve, but now let's put different people in different segments when we're talking about, say, environmentalism. All the way on the left, Greenpeace. Moving a little to the right, Sierra Club. The mass market, people who want to do the right thing, even if it's cheap. And all the way on the right, the people who want to nuke the baby seals. Over and over again, marketers focus at the center of every curve they encounter. And every time, they're disappointed. The center is crowded, jammed with noise, and devoid of unfilled wants. It's at the edges that you find people with an unfulfilled worldview. I worry about using the term worldview. It implies that a consumer's bias affects the way he thinks about big things, world-size issues. In fact, more often than not, worldview affects the way we approach tiny issues. It affects the way consumers think about chocolate bars or resumes or a commercial on the radio. A worldview is the lens used to look at every decision a person is asked to make. At the same time, it's naive.